It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome into the VolQuest podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Austin Price, Brett Hubbs, and Rob Lewis. As always, a big thank you to our friends. That is Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor of the show. They've been local and trusted since 1999. That phone number is 865-524-5888. You visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. If you have roofing, siding, windows, garage, any of those home makeovers or home repairs, contact Exterior Home Solutions today. We got a lot to get into here on this edition of the VolQuest podcast. Fall camp is pretty much over. They've been transitioning this week into mock game week because this time next week, is game week. The coaches need to learn how to go through that. The players need to learn how to go through that. And obviously a lot to get into in that regard. What we know about this team, some players, are they above or below the line? Who could help this team? All that coming up. But first, Tennessee recruiting just continues to stay hot. Austin Price, you were in it from the ground floor with David Sanders. He made it official, committing to Tennessee on Saturday. And then, of course, Tennessee gets a big-time flip on Sunday. But let's start with David Sanders. How long was it going to be Tennessee, and what does this mean for not only the class, but for the Tennessee program as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's been like Tennessee for a long time. He just fell in love with the place. Depending on whether you got him or not, it's been kind of your viewpoint of this thing. But, I mean, he's just a kid that is a big family-oriented kid. Grandparents, super involved in the process. Mom and dad, super involved. The sisters, super involved. And all that played a role. And Tennessee did a great job of winning the entire family over. They did a great job of winning David over. And then you throw in George McIntyre and kind of the trajectory of the program and how LRB coaches and this and that. I mean, it just kind of all connected for Tennessee. As he told me, you know, he knew in June. And I think it was trending that way even before that. Like, I think Tennessee's been the leader in his mind for longer than that. But he knew in June. And, they just kind of went through the process and, you know, had a little fun and all that the rest of the way.
Yeah, I thought two kind of moments where it was, you know, sort of a tip of the cap, if you will, without them giving a tip of the cap, AP, was at the Nashville On Three Elite event when they talked about – Mom talked about David driving over from Charlotte to get comfortable with the drive to Knoxville. Now, that wasn't saying he was coming to Knoxville. They had a pretty easy out saying, well, just in case. But he was practicing the drive from home to Tennessee's campus, which was a pretty noteworthy anecdote, if you will, in the recruitment, or a little side note there. And then, Austin, I go back to the – and it was done, and this is when I think you knew it was done, that last weekend in July when he goes to Nebraska and then he came to Tennessee. And, some people at some other schools were like, yeah, he just stopped at Tennessee on his way back through to go home. And I don't think anybody realized he flew back to Charlotte, got in a car, and his family got in the car, and then came to Knoxville to see Tennessee. So it wasn't like he was just driving back through and popped off the exit to say hi. It was a destination that they went through, and it was not an easy travel to get from Lincoln to Knoxville for that final weekend where it really kind of became all official at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, just when you looked at this thing from in its totality, he visited Tennessee more than anywhere else. And you're right, to be able to fly into Charlotte and drive back over to Tennessee. And the dad got stuck in Omaha, you know, and because they had a problem with their flight and it was oversold and he got bumped. And
yeah, so, that airport's a mess right now anyway. Continue, yeah, sorry.
Eric, you know better than I. I've never been. Eric, the king of the Omaha trips. but you know, the sisters, Mom, David, they flew into Charlotte, got in the car, drove straight here. The dad was able to finally get a flight, and he actually did fly into Knoxville late that night, to meet him. But just came here and just wanted to hang out with everybody, and that's all it was. It was a big hangout session. It wasn't anything more than that. Anybody saying otherwise doesn't know what they're talking about. And, Tennessee just did a fantastic job, really dating back over a year ago, but really turned things up. I remember thinking, yeah, maybe they got a shot, and I think it was, I know I told Matt, I think we called you right away, Hubs. And I said, when this David Sanders interview, and when we went over there in February, I said, when it comes out, man, it's going to be hard to stop the train from going down the tracks, because he was so over the top in his, you know, love for Tennessee and his thoughts on Tennessee. I'm like, it's hard not to, if you're a Tennessee fan, it's going to be hard not to get your hopes up
sure.
for David Sanders at that point. And exactly, you know, it just kind of steamrolled from there. You see Grant Williams right there. Grant telling me, he was like, I said, you know, and he's like, I swear I don't know. He goes, I told him I didn't want to know. I told him to surprise me. And so he was thrilled. And I mean, Rob, you covered Grant when he was 18. He was like talking to a 40-year-old. That's what it's like talking to David Sanders. I mean, two guys that are very smart, very intelligent, that you know, just kind of navigate through tough waters pretty easily for young men.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know David obviously a lot better than I do, AP. But just watching, you know, watching on video, seeing him talk. I mean, you're right. I mean, see, the similarities between those two guys at that age are, I mean, they're pretty obvious. And I think a lot of the things that appealed to, you know, even though, you know, the football and basketball programs are different, I think a lot of the bedrock fundamental stuff is the same. And I think a lot of the same kind of things that appealed to David about Tennessee culture wise. You know, family-wise, just the environment, atmosphere. I think those are the same kind of things that, you know, appealed to Grant, you know, coming from a similar background and environment out of high school.
Yeah, and I think Tennessee did a really good job in that first visit or two. And AP, going back to what you were saying after that interview at the high school, their first initial impressions with David Sanders was so much more than football. It was so much more than a big stadium and the SEC bright lights. I mean, from day one, it was all about the Tennessee culture. And I think they had a really good parameter and a really good idea of what was important to the Sanders family. And that was their focus from day one all the way through. And it wasn't big lights, big city. It wasn't big stadium, you know, that type of thing. It was about the culture and the environment and the development factor and all those types of things. And I think Tennessee did a good job initially with their getting them in the door. By not getting caught up in glitz and glamour, but really diving into what he was looking into and what he was about.
And we've been asked this a couple of times on the board. I mean, as for who finished second, I do believe it was Ohio State. I think Nebraska was third. Georgia was a very, very, very distant fourth. And then everybody else after that doesn't matter. But I don't think it was ever really close. You know, again, I don't really care what anybody else says. You know, I think that the family looked at Ohio State. They liked Ohio State, but I think they had serious reservations as to whether Ryan Day will be there. In other words, he's either going to win and move on to the NFL, like a lot of people have kind of got pegged, or if he doesn't win, Ohio State will move on from him. And was he going to be there for the long term? They know where Josh Heupel stands, and they love the fact that Glenn Ellerbe is Josh Heupel's guy as the O-line coach. And that goes a long way with, you know, certain people that went a long way with the family. And by the way, I love the grandparents of that picture. Everybody knows I'm big on grandparents because I love mine so much. And so I love that he had them involved in everything. Yeah, I mean, you know, Ohio State, I think, probably did finish second there. But I think Tennessee was the leader for a long, long time and you know, just did a fantastic job.
And again, I think proximity was a factor, too.
It was.
I mean, that's not the sole factor, but I think – when you're starting, and we talk about this all the time in recruiting, when things are even, when things get pretty even, what are the swaying factors? And I think one thing that was in Tennessee's favor was that they could make the drive, and they can make the drive from Charlotte. They weren't uprooting their whole family to move somewhere where he was going to go to school. That was never in play with him from everything I understand. And so I think being in the footprint, right? I mean, you got an elite player that's in your footprint of recruiting, and Tennessee capitalized on that. Now, you had to go recruiting. You couldn't sit there and go, well, he's in our backyard or he's close. And I mean, it was none of that. But I think the proximity was a notch in Tennessee's favor to go along with other things in Tennessee's favor.
Let me ask you this, Austin, about almost 6'6", around 275 right now. He's got a frame where obviously they're going to want him to put on some weight. He'll be an early enrollee in January. It's tough to come in at that position and play right away as a true freshman. But, you know, for him, what will he need to do when he gets on campus outside of just putting on some good weight?
Yeah, I mean, he's up close to 300 now. Like, okay. A lot of those weights are old. They still don't get updated enough. But yeah, I mean, he's in, like,
he looks slim. I guess, like, he looks slim. Like, he looks like an athlete. He doesn't look like he's got a lot of bad weight.
No, he has no bad weight. But yeah, I mean, it's just about, you know, putting on a little bit more weight, putting on muscle, because athletically he's going to have everything you're looking for. I mean, when you're his size and you're running, you know, the 40 and 4.8-ish, like that's moving for a big fella. And so, you know, again, I think just putting on more muscle, putting on some good weight and, you know, getting a little over 300 pounds. But otherwise I think, you know, he'll be, you know, he won't have to do a ton when he gets here. And again, he's got all, you know, all football season to kind of perfect that a little bit. And, you know, again, his ability to be versatile, to be able to go out there and do what he did just right there on that screen play was really, really impressive. And looking forward to seeing him play in person coming up here in a few weeks when Tennessee plays in Charlotte against NC State.
You know, Rob, he's bigger. I think he's got more physicality, but he reminds me a little bit of Juwan James.
That's a good one. Juwan James came out
of high school, and Juwan was a plug and play guy. Now Tennessee had to have him as a plug and play guy there, but you know he needed some more strength and some things. But he survived playing tackle his first year, and by the end of the year was a really nice player. I think there's a little bit of similarity in them athletically. I do think David's got a little more pop to him than Juwan probably had coming out of high school. But they kind of remind me of each other with their length and kind of their athletic build.
And how light on their feet. And if you remember, Juwan was a really good high school basketball player. I mean, he was, you know, I'm not saying he was, you know, getting up and down 94 feet, but I mean, back to, he had boobs. I mean, he was deft. And, you know, I see David a lot the same way. And I think that's a great comparison number for Juwan. And I think people forget how good Juwan was. I mean, he was a top 20 NFL draft pick. And had it not, you know, had he not blown out that Achilles, he might still be playing.
You guys might not know the answer to this, and I know it's changed probably as everything does over the years. What are those rules, Brent AP, to where can you give them a weight plan and a nutritional plan as a commit, or do you have to wait until they are officially signed?
Well, I think you can give them – you can get with, you know, the high school coach, and you can talk about nutrition plan, and here's your weight goal and everything else. I mean, that's all up for them to do. You can certainly make recommendations. It's not like, you know, giving them a playbook or, I mean, heck, you go back years ago. I mean, Randy Sanders, after the quarterback sign, went and did in-home visits after Schaefer and Ainge signed to go over the offensive playbook to try to get them ready because they weren't midterm enrollees and they were going to have to play in 04. But he could certainly visit with the nutritionist. I mean, when he comes up for unofficial visits, he'll talk to all those people about kind of where he's at. The last thing on that of my worry about him is him from a physical. I mean, it's just a matter of learning this tempo, you know, and learning the scheme. Because I think physically he's going to be plenty fine to step right in and be able to play. I mean, he'll be more physical as a 23-year-old than he will be as a 19-year-old, obviously. But I mean, he's not a project physically in terms of weight gain, muscle strength, and that kind of stuff. I think he's much more polished to be a plug and play guy, you know, maybe at right tackle or left, we'll see. But I think he can step right in, and I think everybody felt like that. I don't think it's just this system. I think Nebraska saw him as a day one starter. Ohio State was, they're looking for a left tackle still in this class. They just saw him as a plug and play guy. I think everybody recruiting him, I don't think that was just a recruiting pitch. I think that was he can play right. He can play very quickly. Pitch. Nobody was like, okay, this guy's a project who needs to get a lot stronger and a lot more physical before he's ready to go.
Yeah, I was more or less just curious in general because I've been asked that question a couple times the last couple weeks. And
sure, they can give them a plan, a diet plan, all that kind of stuff. I mean, you can do that in any sport. I mean, Rick Barnes can tell a guy, hey, here's where your weight needs to be when you get here, and here's Garrett Mendenhall's plan on how to get you there before you arrive.
Yeah.
It's up to you to follow it, but yeah, you can give them that kind of stuff.
Want to move on to obviously a big time flip on Sunday afternoon, but before that, real quick, AP, you know, Nico, James Pierce, GMAC, Brandon. I mean, there's been some big time recruiting wins for Josh Heupel since he's been here. You know, what does this mean for the program? Not just the class. What does this mean for the program for Josh Heupel to reel in a guy like David Sanders?
It just continues the trajectory, continues the upward arc. They've done a really nice job of you know, picking a few guys in each class and, like, you know, going after them hard. And they've done a nice job of landing most of those big time players. And they've recruited their footprint really well. I expect them to be heavily involved in North Carolina again, but just continue to show that, you know, you're here for the long haul by winning these type of recruiting battles. And that goes with also flipping Jaden Harmon on Sunday.
AP, is in your mind, is this the best non-quarterback yet for Josh Heupel? Because James Pierce was a really good player, but a lot of people wondered about the academics and he was going to not sign early. There were some people hesitant to recruit. Nobody was hesitant to recruit David Sanders, right? I mean, so with where David Sanders has been for such a long period of time, rankings-wise, how sought after he's been by everybody, this is the best non-quarterback commit of the Josh Heupel era?
Yeah, I think so. You know, there's been several good, really good wins, but this one just kind of feels different. It feels Nico-ish. You know, it's not quite the same because it's not a quarterback, but it is that guy that protects the quarterback. And, you know, when Josh Heupel got here, he had Darnell Wright here that was left from by the previous staff. But they didn't have a lot of tackle bodies in that room. And you look around there now, and, I mean, the offensive line body count is pretty impressive just with kind of the size of the O-line now. And so, you know, it'd probably take another year or so to kind of get them to where they want them to be as far as, you know, ready to play and that type of thing. But you have to like where they're headed. But, yeah, I would say that this is the biggest non-quarterback win during his tenure.
AP, you and Hubbard both talked about it. I just want to say, I think what's cool or neat or noteworthy about Heupel and the way he's not so much with Sanders, but with Nico and GMAC, you guys have talked about targeting him early. And I think it's reflective of how he is on, you know, fourth down or, you know, what, or his play call. I mean, he's like, he pushed all his chips in the middle of the table. Like, what if you miss on Nico? What if you miss on GMAC? What if GMAC goes to Alabama? What if, you know, Nico stays on the West Coast? I mean, where are you at with those guys? But he's ballsy enough to, you know, we want this guy. I think that we got it. We can sell him. And I mean, I think that's a big deal that he's confident enough to go in and against the kind of people, you know, he was recruiting against in those cases. I think that's significant.
Yeah. Someone asked me, like, compare and contrast this one with Jordan Seaton and AP. I mean, please tell me where I'm wrong here, but like Jordan Seaton, Tennessee jumped in, was a real player, but they jumped in. Tennessee was there from day one with David Sanders.
Yeah. There was no jumping in. They were already in the pool. And, so, yeah, I agree with that. I mean, Tennessee was, I won't say late to the party because I don't think that's accurate, but it was not like from the, you know, from the ground up. Yeah. And so I think that's different.
But you know, I mean, if we don't get Nico, what's it feel like right now? I mean, I know they would have gotten somebody else and who knows, but it doesn't feel like it does today.
Yeah. I mean, they just kind of, they got Nico and they kind of built off of that, you know, it doesn't even have to be your five-star type players. I mean, it's just getting really good players like Mike Matthews and so on and so forth.
Transfers.
They've done a nice job of hitting on those players, which goes back to, you know, the whole, you know, just the vibe, the culture, so to speak, that Heupel and them have created here. And I think the best thing going for them is kind of like with Tony Vitello, the current and former players are singing your praises. Same thing here with current and former Vols. Sans Wesley Walker, you know, loving Tennessee up, loving Josh Heupel up, and everything about Tennessee.
Well, and I think I've said this before. I think again, we're also seeing the results of the 22 season now. Whereas everybody wanted it the Monday after you beat Alabama. All right, how many guys are jumping in? You know, I mean that class was over, right? AP. I mean, now you're Tennessee. You've got some noteworthy wins under your belt. You've got some guys who are going in the NFL and doing some things that played for you that you helped develop. You have no NCAA speed bump in front of you. You are as well organized, if not the best organized world in NIL and have been. Okay, don't shortchange that in any of this process. Just in terms of the organization, the professionalism, how it's done, the presentations and all those things are a factor. I think when you count all of that together, you're seeing the fruits of that labor now. And I think, Rob, you make a good point. I mean, they targeted Mike Matthews right out of the gate, right, AP? Like, that was their guy they were going to go get. I mean, like, that's where we're going at that position is he's our priority. And the same thing with David Sanders and Nico and George and those types of things. I mean, they've done a good job with early targets.
They did. I mean, I was looking at, you know, kind of a list of guys a year ago, and they had Matthews listed on both sides of the ball at the time. And I said, is this the same guy? And they're like, yep, we don't care what he plays. We just want him on our team. And sure enough, here he is a year later on Tennessee's team.
Let's get into a linebacker commit that flipped from Alabama and Jaden Harmon, and some more recruiting wins and successes for Tennessee, plus guys who can help this team in 2024 who are above and below the line. That coming up next here on the VolQuest podcast. But first, let's get a word from our friends, our presenting sponsors, that is Exterior Home Solutions.
Severe weather can strike at any time in East Tennessee, and Mother Nature can do severe damage to the first and most important line of defense that you and your family have against Mother Nature, and that is your roof. Whenever she strikes, make sure that you call the people that I call. Make sure you trust the people that I trust, and that's my friends at Exterior Home Solutions, because they're more than friends, they're truly family.
Exterior Home Solutions, the presenting sponsor of the VolQuest podcast. That phone number, again, a free estimate, 865-524-5888. You can visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. So it was a monumental weekend in recruiting. There's been a couple of those, it feels like, for Tennessee here in recent weeks. David Sanders commits to Tennessee officially, publicly on Saturday. And then kind of coming out of nowhere, AP, Jaden Harmon flipping from Alabama to Tennessee, a top 170 linebacker, a four-star, and a second really nice addition for a linebacker to this class.
Yeah, and realistically, Eric, Tennessee was there from the jump with Jaden Harmon, but then BJ left. And that kind of put Tennessee in this weird spot because Jaden didn't know William Inge at the time. He went ahead and committed to Alabama. Alabama, you know, has got a bigger linebacker room in this class. I think he looked at himself as a chance to come here and be, you know, if not, you know, the guy, one of the top couple of guys in the room at linebacker in this class. And Tennessee did a nice job there. He got to know William Inge and got to kind of get to talk to him about, you know, different things. He did his homework by calling the current players, calling Arion Carter and Jeremiah T. Lander and players like that, and Edwin Spillman, and asking them what it's like to play for William Inge. And those guys, you know, were like, hey, man, he's awesome. Come play with us. And Jaden Harmon decided Tuesday night about 7 o'clock last week to get in the boat, and then was going public on Sunday. And next thing you know, they flipped an Alabama commit, and just a big wave of momentum, as big as Saturday was with David Sanders. Sunday just as big, because who you're flipping him from.
Well, and I think the story in this one for me is what you're just saying, AP. It's what the current players did in this recruitment. Josh Heupel talked about that a little bit on Monday when he was asked a couple of recruiting questions. And Rob, there's no bigger recruiting tool, good or bad, good and bad, than your current players. Because your current players are going to be as transparent and as clear as possible. They'll tell the recruit what they think of the coaching staff and the program. They'll also tell the coaching staff what they think of the recruit. It's the most honest assessment that you get in the world of recruiting. And obviously, the culture, and I think culture is overused, but the environment that Josh Heupel has in his program is lending to success, because there's a lot of players that have been on this roster for a while that are pretty happy playing football at the University of Tennessee under this current staff.
And in this day and age, could easily be somewhere else,
sure,
you know, with no penalty. And to your all's point, I mean, you hear coaches, you know, Heupel talks a lot, and Tony V does too, about, you know, your players in your program are your best recruiters. I mean, we always think about, you know, guys hosting them, showing them a good time. But I mean, we have all heard stories. It's the flip side too. I mean, those kids they'll tell the truth if it's bad. I mean, they don't have any incentive to, you know, to lie to a kid to get them to come there if they're having a bad time. We've all heard stories about guys going, hey, you don't want to come here, you know, this or that. I mean, kids are truthful, positive and negatively.
And I think for William Inge, those guys being his aide, AP, was huge because he just hasn't had time to establish relationships with recruits because he's been on the West Coast. He wasn't recruiting in this footprint. He wasn't recruiting a lot of these guys. So they're trying to get to know William Inge quicker. So they're doing more research. And where do you research? The guys who went through spring ball with him and have spent the last 4 or 5 months with him. I think that's to finish out this linebacker class, he had to have that kind of help from those guys. And obviously he got it with Arian Carter and T. Lander and Peely and the guys who seem very comfortable playing with him here over the last 5 or 6 months.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. I mean, we talked about Darrell Sims, you know, needing, you know, the 26 class is going to be where he can make the most hay, much like Ablin's 25 class was when 24 was kind of his first year, and getting in, you know, indoctrinated into to it all in late February. And just same way. I mean, Inge came from recruiting at Washington, recruiting the Pac-12. It's all he's recruited is West Coast, just a different level. It's a different speed. Not as cutthroat out there. It's not to say that those teams don't recruit well, because they do. I mean, look at, you know, Washington played for the national title last year, but the recruiting portion of this is not nearly as competitive as it is in this league, going against the Georgia, Alabama, LSU, Auburn, whoever. So, you know, I think, you know, Inge is going to have a chance to improve in this 26 class, but this was a big one for the 25 class, and it resonates. It resonates with every bit of the rest of the class.
Well, you look at, I mean, Christian Gass was Georgia, Tennessee, Harmon's Tennessee, Alabama, yep. And you win both of those. Any way you slice that's a real win for a team that, you know, it's bad to play defense in this program, right? Because the offense puts you in such a bad, I mean, those are two big time wins for Tennessee in this defensive cycle.
Big and also bad to play offensive line, Hubbard. Because yeah. you go so fast, so two commitments. Debunk that this weekend.
I mean, I will say right now. I mean, like this staff has knocked it out of the park. I mean, it's been the grand slam this recruiting class, and especially the last 6 to 7 weeks. How they take this thing to the next level is by winning football games with your current players over the next 6 to 7 weeks. Like you've got to get off to a good start. You've got to beat NC State, beat Oklahoma, be sitting there hosting Florida undefeated. Like if you do that, then that's where, like, you know, the eyeballs really get to, you know, whoa, what, you know, what is going on at Tennessee after being stuck in the wilderness for so long?
So you're saying don't be projected to the Las Vegas Bowl?
That's correct. You got to go win some games. Like that means how you take it to the next level. You go win games, and it's only going to catch more eyeballs for 26, where you've already got the number one quarterback in the country as your fire starter for the class. It just goes a long way.
Agreed. Yeah.
Don't finish 7-5 and 10th in the SEC and, you know, get these guys to jump in here. Needless to say, Tennessee recruiting is on a heater. It's been on a heater for quite some time. It's been a really good summer. This 2025 class is going to be really good. It's going to finish really well. And of course, 2026 is off and running. Let's transition a little bit. A couple more minutes left on this podcast. Let's talk a little bit about fall camp. Again, transitioning away from fall camp into mock game week. You know, Hubs always brings up, you know, above or below the line, can this guy help this team this year? I'm going to bring up a couple of guys, and let's kind of discuss if we think we've learned enough about him in fall camp to where, yeah, they can help this team in 2024, or maybe not yet. I'll throw a name out there. You guys can throw some more out there as well. But I think, you know, let's start with DeShawn Bishop. News came on Monday that Cam Seldon's full go. You know, Dylan Sampson's being a little limited, of course, but he's going to play this year. We know that. Peyton Lewis is coming back around. You know, there's quite a few of them running backs there, but DeShawn Bishop's been a guy that's been there every single step of the way, every day in fall camp. Brent, is DeShawn Bishop above or below the line? Will he help Tennessee this year?
He's above the line, and he deserves every opportunity that he gets in the Chattanooga game, and he should get some opportunities in the Chattanooga game. And then how it shakes out moving forward after that, you know, is his growth and development. Peyton Lewis's growth and development, Cam Seldon. I mean, they've consistently played three under Jerry Mack in a rotation that was awkward at times, right, AP? But they rotated three. you know, I don't know how many they're going to play, but Deshaun Bishop has been there entire fall camp. He's drawn praise. I'm looking forward to seeing Deshaun Bishop get some opportunities in the Chattanooga game, see what he can do with it. And then as the season goes along, you get nicks and bruises and bumps, and we'll see what whose development's where and all those things. But, I mean, for me, Deshaun Bishop's definitely above the line.
Agreed.
AP, who will be the cage cheetah out of the foursome?
I don't think anybody's going to do that this year, Rob. Like, you know, Dylan's going to be the starter, so he has no reason to do it. That's not Cam's style at all, and Peyton Lewis is a true freshman. So I guess if it was going to be anybody, it might be Deshaun Bishop, but I don't think he's that kind of kid either. So, but, yeah, I mean.
I will say this. I think Darrell Sims is – and this is a good problem. This is not a bad problem. Darrell Sims, for all of the talk all summer long about – Austin, they needed to go to the portal. They needed to go get somebody out of the transfer portal. The running back depth was a train wreck to start the year. Where are you at? This has suddenly become a room that you've got quite a bit of confidence in, quite a bit of depth in, and it puts Darrell Sims in an interesting situation in terms of managing that rotation because Seldon's ahead of schedule, Lewis is not disappointed, and Deshaun Bishop has been a really nice – Every time he goes through 11-on-11 work, he's been a surprise. He's played well, so they've got a better problem to have at running back than anybody thought they were going to have when Seldon went down with that injury back in spring.
Yes,
I think this one's kind of interesting. He's not a name that we ever throw out there at all, but you can tell that he's gotten so much better since he stepped foot on here a couple years ago. His body looks so much different. He's not in the top three at his position. But if something were to happen where two offensive tackles went down, Larry Johnson, is he above or below the line?
I think he's above the line out of necessity. I don't know that he's any kind of regular rotation there. I don't think he can play left. You know, I think, you know, he would play – he would be in there at a right tackle spot right now. I think the third tackle, you know, you got Dane Davis, so I think most people believe is going to be the third tackle. Then I think it gets interesting as the season progresses. Is it Larry Johnson, AP, or is it Jesse Perry as a tackle? You know, as kind of in your two deep there, where would your rotation go with that? How much more does Jesse Perry develop as we move forward? Because for me, that's a guy I had below the line when he signed with Tennessee and when spring practice started. I thought Jesse Perry was the biggest lock to redshirt of anybody they signed at that position. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but that's the way I felt. He was coming out of the single wing. Pass protection was a concern. I didn't know if he was big enough and physical enough. To me, he was an absolute below-the-line guy before spring ball started. And I think where he's at now, he's pushing to – I mean, I would call him an above-the-line. I think there's a chance he could end up being your first tackle off the bench at some point this season.
Wow, Hubs.
Am I wrong?
No, I agree with everything you said. It's just very anti-Hubs like to be so positive.
I mean, I think Dane's going to be the first tackle because he can play all the
players. But to your point, though, after Dane, it gets murky because, I mean, you know, if something happened to Hurd, Campbell's healthy and can play, he'll play left. Yeah. Dane will play right.
Right.
Again, after that, it's like, well, what the heck are you going to do?
Yeah. But that's a reflection of what AP you guys are saying about tackle bodies. I mean, 2 years ago, I mean, you don't want to play Larry Johnson and Jesse Perry, but 2 years ago, I mean, those you didn't have two guys like that to even, you know, think about.
Yeah, and I think Larry Johnson,
like Bennett Warren or anybody else like that.
Yeah, great point.
I think Larry Johnson has improved dramatically. I think his body's in better shape. I think he's got a better understanding. I think he's playing. I think Larry Johnson has made huge strides. So I think it will be an interesting deal. It would be an interesting deal to see where they went there. But I think, you know, again, both of them are a surprise, and we'll see where they're at. I mean, I think both of them are in a position that if called upon, there's a little more comfort level there than anybody anticipated that they would have. I mean, Larry Johnson was never mentioned in spring ball, was he?
I don't think so, not much.
You know, and now he's in, you know, I mean, he's gotten a bunch of first-team reps at right tackle throughout fall camp because John Campbell's not done anything. So They've got a much better evaluation for him because he's gone up against Pierce and those guys every day, which has made him better.
Maybe another one out of necessity as well, because, I mean, gosh, he could very easily start. But, you know, you've called him the biggest surprise. You know, Hubs, you said this. AP, you said this. But Christian Harrison very well could be the starting star. I think Boo's going to play a lot of that as well. But is that more out of necessity, or do we think that he's actually taken some steps and turned into a pretty good football player here, knowing he's still a work in progress?
I think he's taken steps. I mean, I still think it's a surprise that he's in the position he's in. But I think he had a really nice offseason. And is probably playing a little more confidently than he was. Maybe it's the fact he cut the dreads off and he's kind of, you know, more old school look. I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's just a new approach from him. But, I mean, he definitely feels like he's improved. Again, it'll be up to him to see whether he can stay out there ahead of Boo, because Boo's going to keep coming. But, you know, Christian Harrison, in talking to some people last week, has absolutely gotten better.
Well, and I think they're going to play both of them. I think they're going to play both of them a lot, which they should. You know, and you never know, Rob. Sometimes it's just a position switch, right? I mean, it was a corner. He was a corner. I don't know how confident he was at corner. Then all of a sudden he's going to go play safety, and Jordan Thomas gets hurt, and he slides in there, and he seemed a little bit more like a natural fit there. I mean, we saw the same thing a year ago. I mean, Dante Thornton, you know, at slot was drowning. I mean, he was struggling. And then he goes outside, and it's more of a natural fit for him that way. Give Christian Harrison credit. I mean, a lot of people thought Christian Harrison would be adios Kazoos back in December. Might be a transfer portal guy. And he's put himself in a situation now where he's going to play football, whether he starts or he doesn't start. I think they're going to rotate pretty heavily at that star position early in the season.
Yeah, and my biggest take of it is this, is it doesn't sound – I mean, my initial thought was, you know, maybe they're just desperate and Boo's not ready. You know, they're scared to death to play him. It doesn't feel like that to me. Does it to you guys? I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, Christian Harrison, you know, they just suddenly discovered an all-SEC guy when they moved him in there. But it doesn't sound to me like, you know, it's a competition just because they're scared to death to play Boo. And maybe I'm wrong, but it feels like Harrison has done some nice things this camp.
Well, remember this too. I mean, when Jordan Thomas went down, I mean, we started throwing out body names. All right, Christian Charles, it makes sense for him to go back there, right? Will Brooks can go back there.
Jalen McMurray,
Jalen McMurray could play there. Obviously, Boo Carter is going to be there, and Christian Harrison wasn't a thought. So this is not, you know, desperation because there's a bunch that there was no other options. This is a guy who's done a good job in camp and put himself in a position. I don't know if he's going to start or not, but I mean, he's climbed above the line because a year ago he was below the line. I think we can all agree, would all agree that he was below the line a year ago in terms of defense. He played some special teams, but to his credit, he's put his head down. He went to work and he's put himself there. I mean, it's a little bit like what Jason Jenkins has done, you know, as a defensive lineman to emerge as a guy in the rotation now because of the way he's just gone to work. And I think you got to give Christian Harrison credit for that. It's a surprise to me. I've said that, and I'm not going to change my stance on that. But it's a credit to Christian Harrison for staying the course and believing in himself, betting on himself, and going to work and capitalizing on an opportunity.
Yeah, there are four of those strong side defensive ends that are going to play. Like, you got three units deep. It's just I'm intrigued to see how Rodney kind of puts all those puzzle pieces together.
It depends on who he's happy with on that series. True. I can tell you exactly True. What's going to happen in that rotation. you messed up, you're coming out.
As for Christian Harrison, I really root for that kid to play well. And then we can do it. And I'll have Kane do an in-depth kind of deal with his mom and dad.
I'd love
mom
to.
Mom loves Kane. Loves
to. Love to. Yeah, great story there from McGee Tyson. Last one. And we think, I mean, it's easy to say they should. We think they're going to play a couple of safeties. Again, in 3 years, we haven't seen that. But you would assume Jacoby Thomas is going to play some safety. You would assume that John Slaughter is going to play some safety. All those guys, and Will Brooks, of course, have been rotating, have been a part of that, you know, two deep all fall camp. Has the game slowed down, Brent, for Jacoby Thomas? Has John Slaughter truly taken some steps from being a freshman last year that didn't see any playing time to where he could be counted on playing one of those safety spots?
Well, I think those guys have taken steps. I think the game's slowing down. I think John Slaughter's taken steps. I think, again, you got to go execute your plan. The plan is to play multiple safeties, okay, and rotate those guys. I think that's been talked about for forever, Austin. I mean, I think that's clearly the plan. Now, when you get into the ball game and, you know, and it's the second quarter, are you really going to do that? Are you not going to do that? I mean, you don't know. It's kind of like the kicker. I mean, you know, you can talk about it on the range. I mean, how many times – let's use an AP golf analogy, Rob Lewis. How many times have you said when you're going out there, when I get to hole eight, you know, I need to hit three wood here, or I need to hit iron here, because driver can bring a big number into play. It's a bad choice. But then you get out there and you're playing the game of golf, and what do? You grab the driver out of the bag, and you just keep hitting the driver, even though that's not the quote right play. So my point is, do you take your plans and use them on game day, or is that, you know, is that just kind of continued talk until they do it? I think we're all going to be like, okay, let's wait and see if they really do it.
Until that Peter Millar collar gets tied around the neck cover, you just don't know. Pressure. I'm with you. I mean, I have no idea.
I mean, I believe 100% that's what they want to do. And correct me if you guys don't think that, if you think I'm wrong on that, then jump in there. But I don't think that's window dressing. I don't think that's just some kind of stand at the podium rhetoric. I truly believe that their intention is to play and rotate at the safety spot. But because they haven't done it in the past, you got to kind of say, all right, let me go see him rotate at that position in a game.
And Josh Hoppus said it again on Monday, Hubbard. I mean, he said it all camp. It'd be specifically about the secondary. He said that kind of thing on Monday. Like, I'm not excited just about the first guys that are going to run out there, you know, about as we're going to.
Last one out the door, guys. I'm sorry, Rob. You were cutting it out right
no,
there.
No, I was looking for a good way to end it.
Gotcha. Out the door here, Bison, Lang, William Satterwhite. Can they help Tennessee if needed this year, AP?
I'm going to say below the line.
Brent?
I mean, if they're forced to play because of injury, then it changes things. But, I mean, I don't think right now that's they're in their top two. Now, everybody knows, and I'm not going to get on a five-minute deal, everybody knows where I stand on the center position. When you get in a ball game and you get an opportunity to play Satterwhite, if you think he's your future center, you better get him in quickly and play him and get him some real snaps. So from that standpoint, I think he's going to play four games or whatever. But if Cooper May stays healthy, I don't think you're going to see any kind of real usage of Satterwhite at the center position. And I don't think Bison Lang has taken and run with anything this preseason camp.
And again, as of today, still, if something were to happen to Cooper, it would be Dane Davis, right?
I think so. I mean, I think early on, for sure. You know, again, they should take any opportunity they get to play those young guys. Don't get caught up in stats midway through the third quarter, right? Rotate them. Get young guys on the field. Nobody wants to hear 5 minutes of that, but you know where I stand on that one. Get them on the field.
All right, that seems like a good stopping point here. We've covered a lot of ground, talked a lot of recruiting, talked a lot about Tennessee exiting fall camp, getting ready for game week, which is this time next week. They're in mock game week right now, game week coming up next week. No better time to join us than right now over at VolQuest.com. AP, there's tons and tons of recruiting stuff from you and Matt, and of course, camp notes on the GQ from Tennessee football, and Vol Club Confidential is back out there. Great piece with Tony Vitello. You got Darrell Sims coming up next week. A lot of stuff going on right now that you're not going to get if you just listen to the podcast. We appreciate you listening, but no better time to join us over on the GQ right now.
That's right. Get the information first over there and find out why Matt Ray is always above the line on the general's quarters.
And he didn't have to work his way above the line. You know what I mean? He came in above. He was a five-star find is what Matt Ray was. He was a five-star find, AP. And is that not right? He just stepped right in. Plug-and-play guy, Matt Ray. Plug-and-play. I like that. Plug-and-play Matt Ray.
If you're watching us on YouTube right now, put in that promo code. You'll get 2 months for $1. 2 months for $1 if you're watching us right now on YouTube or on the website. by putting in that promo code. For Austin Price, Rob Lewis, Brent Hubbs, I'm Eric Kane. Thank you so much for joining us here. And big thanks, as always, to Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor of this show. We'll be back on Thursday for the Mailbag Edition. This is the VolQuest Podcast. You've been listening to the VolQuest Podcast every week here on VolQuest.